Session number 5868, Heart in Mundi, part 8.
I believe I finished that one off by saying about the crosses. Now, this old farm, just outside Everton, as you went into Everton, this old farm, as I told you before, was the Bucks Cemetery. And there, as I looked over and saw those wooden crosses, I thought, well, now, our little cemetery in Plug Street Wood, there were some of my old Bradwell mates there, and then here at Everton, the little wooden crosses there, I thought, well, I dare say there's some more of my old mates there. And then it struck me, I thought, oh blimey, I wonder if I shall win a cross at the finish, a wooden cross. But never mind, now I'll carry on what actually happened. Later, the ambulances came along, the wounded began to come in to this little clearing station, ambulances loaded up, they took us back, I don't know how far back, but it was to a field, well, call it a field if you like, open ground anyway, and there was all marquees with loaded and wounded from different parts of that front. And what I noticed above all was laying outside in the open, in the cold winter ground, laying out on the grass, flat out, was fellas there in rows, not one or two, but dozens, laying in rows outside with the faces as yellow as a lemon and gasping with the tongues out. They'd been gassed. That's what had happened to them. And I never forgot it, how terrible they looked. They couldn't have lived, it's impossible to live, because they looked so terrible. I thought, and I looked at them, I thought, blimey, there's me with a little bit of a wound, that's nothing. Now, moved on then. Eventually, ambulance train came. We was loaded up into this ambulance train, all the lot of us, it's quite a long train, and we ran from there, as near as I can remember, direct to the docks at Le Havre, and there we was put on hospital ship. Now, that hospital ship was the St. Patrick. That was the hospital ship, name of it. And I believe I've said this on other tapes, I don't know, but I believe I've put it, no, have I? Yes, I know I've put it on tapes. I was wondering if I'd put it on those 10 that I sent to that lady, Lynn MacDonald. I sent those 10 tapes to her. I hope, please God, she'll be happy with them. And anyway, it was the St. Patrick we was on. We landed at Southampton. Now, when they took us off the hospital ship, there was a long train at Southampton, and they loaded us up in this train. Well, me, fortunately, was a walking case. The stretcher case is, of course, different parts of the train. But this is what I can never get over. They came along that train and they said, now, where would you like to go? Which hospital would you like to go to? Naturally, I said, Northampton. Northampton General Hospital, that was within 15 miles. Well, train started off and away we kept travelling. And during the journey, I said to one of the nurses, I said, where are we now? She says, Birmingham. That was the station we got to. I said, well, so I thought we were going to Northampton. They asked me, I said, Northampton. Oh, no, 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 she said, this is Birmingham. Well, we travelled on until we reached Sheffield. Now, I've thought since, and I'm blooming sure I'm right. Why they took you as far away as they could from the place where you live was, in my opinion, to avoid so many relatives keep gabbling in the hospitals to look to you. I think that must have been the answer. But anyway, they couldn't have sent me farther away from home, from New Bradwell. And we arrived at Sheffield, and the stretchers was all taken out, loaded up, crowds of them, buses and ambulance coaches all took us up to a hospital there that was called the Warncliffe War Hospital, because I found out naturally later. It was a massive asylum turned into a war hospital, and there was 3,500 beds in that hospital. That was the number of beds in the hospital. Oh no, I missed a piece out. I rambling on. Still, I shan't win any medals, it don't matter. But I should have mentioned, I forgot to mention this, on that hospital ship, the St. Patrick. It was whilst I was on that, I wandered up onto the deck, and the ship was lit up, oh, marvellous, like the illuminations at Blackpool, lit up beautiful. I wandered up on the deck by myself, leaning on the rails, and a nurse came along, and she said, "Tommy, would you like a cigarette?" I said, "Yes, I would, please." And she gave me a packet of cigarettes. Now, I always remember those cigarettes. They was Capstan cigarettes. Well, we stood talking on the deck there, leaning on the rails, for some time. And in the distance, there was a vessel. We could see it quite a long way away, lit up, and it got a green band along the side and a large red cross on the centre of it. And she said to me, she said, "Do you know what that is?" I said, "No, I don't." Anyway, as we kept talking, we kept getting closer to this large vessel. And it was a massive vessel when we got, well, within distance of seeing it properly. It was the Mauritania bringing wounded home from the Dardanelles and the Middle East. Now, the Mauritania in those days was comparable, well, it was one of our largest ships that was afloat at that time, similar to what is it today, the Queen Elizabeth today, and our largest, but that was the same then, and that was the hospital ship, and it was lit up magnificent. It looked a picture in the middle of the night, and I've always thought since that they never sank one, but evidently they did. But that was beautiful. It was a target they couldn't miss. Well, I'll carry on now from where I interrupted myself. I don't know if it'd be interesting, but what I do at home now, because I'm blind, I sit alone at night, hour after hour, and that's why I do these tapes, to amuse myself. I pass the time away by thinking, well, I'll have a bit of a do and think what I should do, what I should say, and so I carry on. Now, that breaks an evening up for me. Oh, I don't know, it don't matter. But half past 8, 9 o'clock at night, I top myself a little drop of whiskey out, put some sugar in it, and then fill it up with water. And so I sit and sip that and tell these tales, romance you can call it, but never mind. I'll talk now about little tales that happened while I was at Wharncliffe War Hospital at Sheffield. Now, it was a massive hospital, and there was one part of it where we used to go down to breakfast, and it was a large, it was a concert room, really, with a staging and everything, and all the tables were set out beautiful for you when you went in for your food. And I always remember you sat at a long table, perhaps 10 or 15 of you, each side of this long table, because it was all over the hall, of course. And they used to bring in at the end of the table a tray in the morning. It was covered with bacon, eggs, and there was another tray, a large tray, covered with haddock. And always remember it. You could have which you like, or you could have both. And at the end, there'd be one of the attendants, or be one of the RAMC chaps, surely. And he'd load your plate up and pass it down. He used to shout, "What do you want? What do you want?" "Oh, so and so, eggs and bacon." "Yeah, slap it on." Now, that was your breakfast. And now, the routine of the hospital was run absolutely on military rules. Anything you'd done wrong, you had to be hauled up in the morning for it. And so, before one of the officers. Now, I'm going to tell you some of the little tales. Perhaps that'll be amusing. Now, in the next bed to me there was a Scots chap. And above all, he'd got a relative in Sheffield that kept a pub. Now, in blue, you used to have to wear a blue uniform then. Wounded always wore blue, so everyone could see you. And you was not allowed in a pub in blue uniform. Now, this Scots chap next to me, he said, "Come on, kid," he said. "I've got an uncle or aunt or someone keeps a pub." He said, "Let's go down," he said. "We'll go and have a drink." So we went down, and that was his relative. They made hell of a fuss. You know, we went, didn't go in the barn or nothing, went in the kitchen. Well, now, oh, blimey, didn't we have a do? Got me on spirits. Well, I was not used to it. But oh, wasn't I sossled? How I got back to the hospital, I don't know, but I did. Now, here's a remedy. I got back to the hospital, one of the orderlies in there, because it was sort of military, really, hospital. One of the orderlies got hold of me, said, "Come on." He took me into the, oh, baloney, this is a subject, took me into the toilet. He said, "Now you drink this and drink it. Don't stop till you've emptied the glass." Now it was a, you know, like a tumbler full. It were hot. "Don't stop," he said, "and don't stop." And he stood there and I scoffed the lot. And oh, hell. It was full of salt. Just salt. Oh, blimey, it wasn't many minutes before I knew what had happened. And I've told years and years later at work, I told some of my mates in the office years and years later, I said, "If you have a right raw binge, don't forget in the morning, if you feel bad, you go and get yourself some hot water and shove a load of salt in it," I said, "and that'll clear you out and you'll be as right as rain in no time." And that's what happened there. It's just another little town. Now, in those days, all papers and magazines, there was always something in it, "Write a lonely soldier that wants a friend." In all magazines, it was the same. "Write any lonely soldier, write to so-and-so address," you know. Well, some of us used to, well, I would one anyway. I sent off, I don't know who it was, and it was a parson somewhere close by, not far from there, evidently, somewhere outside Sheffield. I wrote in that, I wrote, you know, Lonely Soldier. Well, it was the parson's daughter, and had a reply, and he said, because you pal up with one another in your ward, and this was a long ward, and this chap next to me, we were chatting, he saw our kid, he said, your looks, and he said, you've got a reply, he said, and she's coming to see you. I said, oh, blimey. And we both sat on our beds in the ward, and it happened. The next day along come this gal. I thought, oh, she'd be a fly, fast bit of stuff, you know. I thought, oh, well, I'm well away again now. But do you know? Well, she couldn't help it, but oh, blimey, she did look a proper... She would dress well, but oh, she were a proper old slommer. I think I could have called me granny. But oh, didn't I go through the hoop after that with these chaps? But she was ever so nice, you know what I mean. She wanted to talk to a lonely soldier, and she found one. Well, then there was another little tale. Now, I used to go into the kitchen, the wards, and that they had kitchens and so forth, where they dished up tea just for the wounded, and I used to go in there and help the nurses and that washing up and sort of odds and ends. Well, there was one nurse there, it was a nice gal, VAD they were, and we got ever so pally over the time, and we went out one day, and there's a lot of woods close to there. I don't know what it's like today, but there was a large woods. Well, we went and had a lovely evening out together, and as we came back, we realised that it had gone time. Anyone was not allowed out after a certain time. Well, we'd gone long beyond that. And she went home. When we got back to the hospital, and she toddled off home. She lived at Sheffield. And any road I got in, I got hauled up. And I had to appear in the morning before the officer in charge of the hospital. And he gave me a slate and told me I was not allowed, he said, outside those gates after a certain time. And I said, well, I said, it'll never happen again. I won't do it again. Well, now, God willing, all being well, I'll see if I can carry on with some more tales tomorrow night. Good night. I'll carry on now where I left off last night. I should mention now that lady that came to see me on this lonely soldier business, I think you'll realise, and I've been told before, that those letters that you sent out for lonely soldiers, 90% of those that replied were young girls or young persons around your own stamp that came to see you. That's why they pulled my leg so much. But that don't alter the fact at all that lady, although she was nearer 50 than 20, it was very, very kind of her to come and see me, and I appreciate that. Now, I'll wander on now. I was discharged from the Warncliffe Hospital at Sheffield. I went from there to our depot at Aylesbury. I don't know how long I stayed there. Might have been a week or some time, short time. And then I was sent from there to a large convalescent camp in Sutton Park at Sutton Coalfield near Birmingham. Now, that was a massive camp there. Wounded from everywhere was sent there, all wounded, nothing else. And you'd done you'd done no training at all. You was just there, convalescent, and it was a lovely place. We was well fed, well looked after. Now, in the park there, I'll start and tell you a few tales now. In the park was a large lake, but before I talk about the lake, let me try and recall. Oh, I know. Now, I hadn't been there very, very long when I had to go before a medical board. And that medical board passed me, I think they called it B. I'm not sure now what the letters were, B, C, or whatever it may be. But anyway, I was passed unfit for further active service. Well, now, I was highly delighted, never mind about volunteering and so forth, but I was delighted to think that I'd completely finished with the war. But later, Orbin, well, I'll tell you why I wasn't. And it was while we was there, I palled up with a fellow in the up that I was in that came from Bristol. And he was in the Gloucesters. A chap named Bill Maggs. He was like me, a Lance Corporal. And him and I got ever so pally, friendly, and we knocked about together and had quite a nice time. I was there some time at Sutton Coalfield. And as I was saying, there was a large lake there, and boating and so forth. Well, at that time, there used to be the munition factories in Birmingham, which was only a few miles away, not all that far. And they used to come, a train load of these munition girls used to come into the park there and, you know, have an outing for them. Oh, dear. And, you know, join up with us and have a bit of fun and so forth in the daytime. Well, on this particular occasion, this chap, Bill Maggs, and I was sitting down by the lake one afternoon, and there was boating on the lake. And why I'm telling you this is because there's quite a lot of things happened afterwards. Now, while we sat there, there was three ladies came up. It was not all ladies at all. And him and I sat together, and one of these ladies came up and they said, would you take us for a row on the lake? Oh, Bill Mag, well, I used to row a boat along the canal locally, you know, just pass the time away. You could hire a boat at Wolves Bradwell along the canal, and I could row just a little bit, but not much. And we said, yes, we'll take you on the lake for a row, eh? And we did do. We took these three ladies for a row on the lake. And when we came back, we went up into Sutton Coalfield, and they said, would you like something to eat? Well, in those days, there used to be shops in the street. In the window was large trays of faggots all bubbling away, peas, mashed potatoes and sausages and so forth. We went in there, they took us in, these three ladies, took us in, gave us paid for a good feed. Well, when we came out, one of them said to me, shall I write to you? I says, oh, yes, yeah. Well, often during the war, when you met girls, I'd say, I'll write to you. Say, well, because you wrote, and sometimes you replied, sometimes you didn't. But in this case, she said, shall I write to you? I said, oh, yes, yes. She said, what's your name? And your address, your hut number, and so forth. I says, oh, I said, Bob Adams, hut number so-and-so. Well, a day or two later, the postman came into the hut, and the postman always used to come in the morning and shout out the letters for those in the hut, or parcels, whatever it may be. And the corporal came in, the postman, from the camp. He said, Corporal Adams. I'd never give another thought. I was sat quiet, and he kept saying, this Corporal Adams, well, have nothing to do with me, whatever. And he kept on. He said, well, he said, this is addressed to Corporal Bob Adams. Oh, well, I said, yes, yes, I said, that's me. Well, I had this parcel, little parcel. I opened it. There was a nice letter in it. And a box of cigarettes. Now, in those days, I suppose, I don't know whether you know, but there used to be a flat box with 5 woodbines and a penny in each packet. And this box was a flat box, as they were in the shop, 50 packets of 5 woodbines in each packet. 50 packets. And a nice letter saying that would we meet them on another day or two, which day I don't know, would we meet them again, see? So I said to old Bill Maggs, I said, oh, well, look what I got. And we had these fags, and anyway, eventually the day came, a day or two later, and all 3 of them came again. Well, we met them and then started a friendship which was very, very good. Now, they told us who they were. Well, the one that I was friendly with, perhaps put it more friendly than the others. Well, I know it was, so it worked out so. Now, she kept a shop, a grocer's shop at Smethwick. And one of the others kept a public house at Smethwick, and it was called the Beehive, the pub she kept. She kept a public house. Now, the other one was the wife of a pawnbroker, kept a pawn shop, rather. Now, they was all 3 young married women, well-to-do in that circumstances in those days, and we built up a great friendship from that. Well, now that's how they were, and they often came down to see us in the park. They of course was all married, and the youngest one, the one that took to me, was named Emily Sheldon, and that was the one that kept the grocery shop. Now, there's quite a lot I should tell you later on if I can continue with these tapes, but let me state now that there was nothing whatever went wrong. She was ever such a nice person, and later, well, she looked after me beautiful. And there's many tales I'll tell you later on about it, but I'm sure this tape must be getting towards the end. So when I start another tape, if I can, God willing, I'll start another tape and follow on right up till I went away to be a prisoner of war and so forth. But for the time being, I think this tape must be finished, or almost. So I'll say good night, God bless.